A new year, time for new growth. Grow your education and skills with Herzing University. Our online behavioral health programs fit your schedule and time. From an 8-month diploma program in health and human services to a 36-month bachelor's in psychology. Grow your behavioral health career with us wherever you are in your education. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Visit us online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109. Online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109.
Hello. Oh. Welcome to Don't Say Cunt. I'm one of the hosts, Dave Foley, and across the table from me is, what do you want to say, Paul?
Who's across? Oh, me.
Oh, you.
Yes.
Oh, is
I am. I am also
one of the hosts.
One of the hosts. I'm Paul.
I can't remember which one of the hosts you are.
I'm pretty sure I'm not Paul.
No,
Dave.
No. You just said you were Paul.
See, I don't know.
Well, all right. Well, this is Don't Say Cunt. Again, this is the show where we promise 45 minutes of conversation without the word cunt being used.
It's cunt free.
Yes.
And it's a wonderful cunt free.
Because as we understand it, it's a wonderful. It's our adopted cunt free.
That's right.
So it's
I'm loyal to my country.
Yes. Yes. Country before party, I say.
Yes. That's right. I love country and Western music.
Yep. And Humphrey Bogart. I love. I could watch Humphrey Bogart movies all day long, you know, with Lauren Vagina.
Lauren the Vagina. Yeah.
I couldn't. I'm not Humphrey. I'm a little bit rock and roll.
And
that's right.
Yeah, and then who's that? Paul.
Who's that?
That would be Jackie Harris Greenberg.
Jackie Harris Greenberg.
Who's a little bit country.
I'm a little bit country.
Yeah.
And I'm a little bit rock and roll.
And who's that, Dave?
That's Chrissy Guerrero.
That's me.
And who's the tinkling of the pinochles?
The contrapuntal piano playing?
Yes. Oh, wow. You're just showing off now.
Skill.
That is the wonderful Eben Schletter, who is here all the time.
Eben Tinkle Keys.
Yeah, Eben
Schletter.
Eben is the wave upon which we ride.
Mm-hmm.
Eben is the he's the antidote to awkward pauses.
Yes, he's the paste with which we brush our teeth.
Yes.
You brush
your teeth with paste?
I'm not good at,
well toothpaste.
Wait a second.
Toothpaste.
Well, I am from 1806.
Yeah, you just use a big vat of LePage's.
Toothpaste.
Mucilage.
I remember some episode of kids making their own toothpaste and selling it of something.
An episode you had?
It was a mental episode.
Little House on the Prairie.
Yeah. Oh, they would just chew on a stick. Like Vikings. That's what Vikings did.
Gorillas do.
Remember there was a little animated, there was a cartoon when we were kids. I forget what it was. It was on the Uncle Bobby show.
Uh-huh.
And they did a thing about how before toothbrushes, Vikings would clean their teeth by chewing
on their sticks.
I had a gym teacher that used to tell me that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then he'd put a condom on a banana and stare at you intently.
Yeah, that was sex ed class, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. Yeah. We had a teacher.
I was the only one in the class.
Our health teacher was 180 years old.
Yeah.
And he'd put the condom on a cucumber and he'd say, "Grow the hell up. Stop giggling."
No.
That's really good.
I gotta do this every goddamn year.
I had a grade 4 teacher that whenever any noise would happen, he would just go, "This is pathetic." That's all I remember from that class.
Yeah.
Excuse me, sir, I have a question. This is pathetic.
There's a lot of
Mr. Hambly.
A lot of people who go into the teaching trade, and as much as we all have to admit teachers are the true heroes, are really petty people.
So I have taught children a lot over the years.
Oh, yeah. Well done, your point. Well taken.
I was. I can tend to be very petty. I was once teaching elementary school children an acting class.
Yeah.
And I was giving them some direction. And they were, of course, just like all over the place and running around and loud and everything. And I finally lost it and was like, "You guys are acting like children."
I hate when they do that.
Meek little child said, "But we are children."
Fuck you. Fuck you.
Yeah.
I think I'd start, if I was a teacher, I'd have to start every class with, first of all, "Fuck all y'all if you think you're going to talk while I talk."
That'd be good. That should do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe I should have been a teacher.
Should have been a teacher.
Yeah.
Maybe. There's still time.
Dave, what would your subject been if you were a teacher?
If I was a teacher? Yeah. Oh, my goodness. I would like to have been a science teacher, but I was a really terrible science student. So I'm not sure if that would help out with the kids.
Did you like the lab coat?
No, I loved science, but I hated science class. Mm, it was so boring. And they always said things as though they were facts. I would keep going, how do you know? And then the teacher would get mad at me.
So you were the skeptic.
The teacher would get mad at me.
You were a skeptic in science class. Yeah.
Yeah.
Better a skeptic in science class.
How do we know there's
religion?
Gravity if we can't see it?
Yeah. I can't say. How do you know the electron orbits the proton? How do you know it orbits like that?
Well, to be fair, you were also born before the Renaissance.
Yes. Yeah. And
so all that stuff was very odd.
And then it turns out atoms don't orbit the atoms. They don't orbit the nucleus of an atom. They don't.
What do they do?
They exist in a wave function.
Oh, yes. That's true.
And what we consider to be the particle is just sort of an artifact of the...
Oh, that noise is half our audience leaving.
All right. There we go.
No, I actually enjoy that.
I felt the same.
No. I did it as a cheap joke.
I don't care. I like pretty things.
Particles don't exist. That's my main thing. Matter doesn't exist.
Oh, so do I exist?
Nope.
That explains why I'm feeling this way.
Is this going to be another one of those another dimension talks? Or we've already lived and we're just a computer?
Well, that's the ancestor simulation theory.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's also called the Matrix.
The one that makes me cry, that theory.
It's most likely true.
It is weird, though, how you think something and then it shows up some... thinking about...
Well, that's because you ordered it. Ordered it.
Right? That's how Amazon works.
That's how Amazon works. Yeah.
Yes, but what if it's in my head?
Mm-hmm. Oh, Amazon.
I don't say it out loud.
Well, that's schizophrenia.
Do you look at the picture for a long time?
Mm-hmm. No.
That's all Amazon needs now.
No, on the internet.
They'll turn on your camera.
Yeah.
Yeah, they know where you're looking. They know where your eyes are looking.
We actually did that. We tested it the other day.
We talked about a product, and then it showed up on our Facebook
feed. I don't remember what it was, but we wanted to test the theory. Mm-hmm.
By the way, Amazon, if you want to be a sponsor, please let us know.
Yeah.
Because we know you're listening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember it was...
Mr. Bezos.
I remember we had this really fun... It was diarrhea medicine. No, I don't remember what we talked about. But... It did show up.
It was quilts. It was a very specific thing.
Yeah. A very specific quilt.
It was a quilt that you could...
Was it the AIDS quilt?
It was nothing, but I remember the AIDS quilt was amazing. I remember the AIDS quilt. That made me cry. Fuck you guys.
AIDS quilt?
God damn.
That is dark.
No, people can take t-shirts.
I think it's on... You can get it on Etsy now. You can buy the AIDS quilt on Etsy.
It's not the actual one. It's a copy.
I think it's the original.
It's a copy, Dave.
Yeah. And I'm
Dave...
I purchased Judy Chicago's The Dinner Party on Etsy as well.
The actual thing?
Yeah, the actual thing, All those plates that look like vaginas, got them all.
Wow.
You took a while to collect them all.
That is the worst way to have spaghetti.
In a vagina?
On a vagina plate.
Well, on a vagina plate, yeah.
Or the best way. Or the best way.
On an actual vagina.
Yes. Wow.
I never got the sushi on a body thing. That always grossed me out.
Sushi on a body?
Yeah, you know, the sexy parties where they'd have a hot nude model laying there and she'd be covered in sushi. And you'd take it off her.
I've never
That's
even...
not very...
Guys don't
hygienic.
Know how to live.
How do you think I paid my way through college?
I've never even understood wanting to do cocaine off of someone's ass. I never... that didn't...
Off their ass?
Yeah.
That's not appealing.
Yeah, that's what Frank Sinatra, they all did it. They would cocaine always do cocaine off a girl.
Hooker's ass.
Oh, see, I thought it was off a gym teacher's ass.
No.
Oh. See, another thing
ass.
I had
off Sammy's
wrong.
Ass.
Aw, Sammy.
Yeah.
But what if it was
he
like
he also
a
ate
con
fried
game.
Eggs off a hooker.
Yeah, Sammy?
I think. Well, Frank.
Frank, yeah.
Yeah, he was...
That's okay. Egg. Eating them off the hooker is one thing, but cooking them on her is another.
That's just mean.
Wait, where would the fried eggs be? And would they be soft?
I guess.
Sunny side up?
I think they're sunny side up.
Eggs
but I guess that's how you know you've really made it.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I guess I haven't.
I did it.
I haven't.
No.
Mm. Yeah.
Right.
I guess there were a lot of other indications that I hadn't made it too.
Well, yeah.
Well, the fact that you're doing this podcast probably is number one.
Yeah.
Number one.
And
reason.
That's mine.
But this
is fun.
I drive around looking at for sale signs on houses and weeping.
Yeah.
What if you were the sushi model?
Yeah, you're back on the sushi.
And you got some weird
Disease?
Disease.
Like that the girl that died from having the gold paint on her and the gold finger.
Right. Well, that's a myth.
I think it's an urban myth.
That's a myth. Yeah.
She didn't die. She just like ruins her clothes going home.
It's not a weird urban myth because what's his face with the silver paint
in
The Wizard of Oz actually became very ill and probably led to his death, you know, shorter or in a different way, you know? Yeah. Tin Man.
Yeah.
I don't know. He was pretty old on Barney Jones.
It was the lead paint.
Yeah, no, that was...
was it lead? Silver?
It was on Barnaby Jones.
That was the...
Buddy Ebsen.
Yeah, not Buddy Ebsen.
That was the Scarecrow.
Oh, that was the Scarecrow. No, Buddy Ebsen.
No, Buddy Ebsen wasn't the Tin Man. He was the Tin Man, he got fired.
He was the original Tin Man.
Yeah, but he was allergic to the paint, and that's why he didn't have the job.
He allergic to the paint, or was it a different paint, and it almost killed him?
The other guy finished the movie.
I thought it was that he had a reaction to the paint, that it was something in the paint.
Yeah.
And he got sick.
I don't know that it was specific to him, but yeah it was because, you know.
He would have been better. Just saying.
Because what was the name of the man who did play it? It was Jack.
Exactly.
It was Ed. It was Ed Begley. I'm pretty sure.
I love Ed Begley.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey.
It was.
Anybody want to take a bet on what the next ad is?
Are we still getting those?
Otherwise, this will be really awkward.
Let's take a short break.
I bet it's food.
Yeah, really short.
I bet it's food.
Let's find out.
All right, let's see. Here we go. Well, that was surprising.
Well, that was. Yeah. That was shocking.
I didn't see that coming.
Shocking.
Mm-mm. Not at all.
Well, I guess we just move on.
Mm-hmm. So... You know, I did work at Area 52.
Area 52? Yeah.
Yes.
And what happened there? What sort of stuff went on in Area 52?
Well, at Area 52...
It didn't get much press.
It did not. And
didn't get much press at all.
Myself and my coworkers are still a little upset that anybody ever wants to talk about is
Area 51. You needed your own Bob Lazar.
Exactly.
The guy who broke
our UFO expert.
The news on there.
But we didn't
51.
Have UFO. We weren't working with UFOs.
Well, there's another problem right there.
Yeah.
You're not going to get much prep. Mm. Well, what were you doing at Area 52?
We were working with different ways to pack fast food.
And this was a black budget project for the U.S.
Yeah, I think
military?
So.
Yeah.
We started with styrofoam.
Yeah.
Kept the hamburgers very warm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, see, here I'm thinking you may have benefited from not getting a lot of coverage.
Why you say that?
It might have been in your best interest that people didn't know about this.
Well, next time you go have a Chipotle bowl, you're welcome.
Yeah. They don't okay? use styrofoam.
They don't use styrofoam. Yeah,
no, they got
I know. That's 80, because we found out it was bad at Area 52.
Oh.
Do the hamburgers melt into the styrofoam? Yeah.
No, nothing really happened. It was a pretty bad job.
Yeah.
I don't know. And scene. Thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks, Evan.
Yeah. But you did work with Grays.
Evan,
mm-hmm.
yes. As a lawyer, how much of a bit, how long does a bit go before you don't get your money back when you realize it's bad?
Oh.
When it fails.
Is it 50%?
Is it 50% when you leave the theater for when you get hold of the manager?
If I go to a play.
What are you timing?
And I'm like, I'm at 49% of this play and I'm like, I don't like this play.
Yeah.
It's not good.
Let's say it was
Hamilton.
Hamilton.
Before intermission, you're saying.
I don't know. Wherever 50% lands.
Let's say it's Starlight Express.
Okay.
Yeah, perfect
example. I've never seen Starlight Express.
I think we should stick with Hamilton.
But I think, can I get my money back anyway because it's that bad?
Right.
Can people who have never seen Starlight Express get a refund?
Right. Like, can you get your money back just on the basis of roller skates?
Yes.
Well, Evan?
In the case of Starlight Express, the roller skates makes it a definite yes. You can get your money back.
Yes, if you purchase roller skates.
in normal circumstances, I think it's just pi, 3.14 minutes.
Oh,
if you know. I didn't know there was a formula for it.
Yeah, yeah. I think they tried to get, you know, figuring it out.
Yeah.
I don't know. The roller skates would be a bonus to me. I think you shouldn't get your money back if it's like roller skates.
Well, what if you bought roller skates because you thought, it'd be great to be in Starlight Express.
Oh, and then you find out you actually don't get to wear your
and
observing
then you find
only.
It's a horrible play.
What if you thought you were going to a place where they were going to let you wear roller skates?
Did they make a movie of Starlight Express?
Probably.
Just as evidence.
I was mixed up Starlight Express and Xanadu.
They're both terrible, but try and tell that to my wife and daughter.
Should I try and tell it to them?
They insist on enjoying Xanadu. They just will enjoy it.
You know what?
Enjoy it again, and nothing I can do will stop them.
You know what I think is a really overrated movie, and I don't understand why people think it's one of the greats.
Which one
is Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band with the Bee Gees?
Oh, nobody yes, thinks but it's great.
Produced by Robert Stigwood. Yeah.
You mean sarcastic.
See, this is why you guys don't get along. Yeah.
No, but here's the thing. This I really liked it when it came time. Out because it I had Peter Frampton.
Yeah, it was terrible. Oh. What's happening? Goodness.
Oh, my God.
We're talking.
A surprise guest.
An odd coincidence.
And it's maybe the greatest surprise guest of all time.
We're discussing great movies, and we're joined by the great film critic, one of the few great film critics. Still left in this great world of ours. Leonard Maltin is
Leonard
here.
Leonard Maltin, what an honor.
How are you? How are you guys?
Very well, thank you. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. I got here. Los Angeles is an accomplishment in itself.
Yes.
That's true.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Now, Leonard, we were just discussing.
We were talking movies.
Robert Stigwood's production of Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band.
Mm-hmm.
Great movie.
No one's idea of a great movie. I feel safe.
Where do
say.
You think it failed?
Yep. Where did it succeed?
We don't have time.
No.
Yeah.
But I haven't seen it since it was new.
Neither have I. I saw it in the theater.
I remember liking pieces of it.
Yeah.
There's some segments that I thought were pretty good.
Yeah.
And as in all these Beatle, jukebox musicals.
Yeah, there was Across the Universe. There was that one a few years back.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Is this the Danny Boyle movie you're talking about?
Is he doing a Beatle movie?
He's doing a movie about a guy who hits his head and wakes up, and he's the only one that knows Beatles songs.
And the Beatles never existed?
Yeah. But he knows all their catalog and plays it.
Yeah.
And everybody thinks he's writing
it. He's a genius.
Oh. That's kind of brilliant.
I kind of like that.
Called Being Sort of There.
Right. Right. That's interesting. You know, your book and all the different versions of your book was, I worked in the world's biggest
bookstore.
Video store in Canada.
Oh, video store.
Oh my gosh.
I worked at Sam the Video Man, which is in Sam the Record Man.
That was one.
Yeah.
Was. It's gone. But whenever anybody would come in and ask for a movie, they would ask our opinion, and all we would ever do is get out your book and give them your opinion.
Yeah.
Well, I know it was a staple in video stores. Some people would haul their own along to the store, and others had it on a chain in the store, like a pen at a bank, you couldn't walk away with. It's all very flattering.
It's probably the most dog-eared book ever published. I'm guessing. Yeah,
possibly.
But you would always buy it again because of all the fresh, you'd had to have it with all the new movies.
Mm-hmm.
It was like a brilliant.
Updated.
It was brilliant because you always needed the new copy.
We used to use it in Second City in the improv set. We'd get the book out and we'd play a game with the audience. And we'd have them flip and name a page number and then have them zoom in on the and act it out.
That's right.
Really fun.
That's
Doug Benson plays a game on his Doug Loves Movies podcast.
There are infinite games, apparently, derived from the book. One is kind of a bluff game where you play it in teams like charades, and you look up a title and then invent a synopsis for it.
Oh, that's great.
There's another one where three different people devise synopses for a title, and you have to guess which is the real one and which ones are bogus.
Ah, yeah.
That's
Doug
great.
Benson's is the toughest one,
mm-hmm.
And I'm the world's worst player of that game, which bears my name. But my brain just doesn't sort information that way. His was kind of a name that tune idea where you'd say, here are three Willem Dafoe movies, one from 1998, one from 2004, one from 2013, and you'd pick one. I'll take the one from 2004. Okay. Leonard lists 11 cast members in his review. How many names do you need to know
in order to name it?
But you'd bid, but you get them in reverse order.
Yes.
Oh, from the lowest
build upward. And people like Sam Levine is like a savant playing this game.
Yes.
He can bid negative numbers and still get the answers.
But in every other way, his life is terrible.
Our son reads the 2013 version every night in bed. And so it's... Yeah,
Chrissy and I have a sex role-playing game based on your book. For some reason, I always wind up being Barbara Stanwyck.
Gee.
Because your attitude.
I have nothing to add to that.
I don't know. I think it's because of my legs.
I'm curious. Do you remember the first movie you reviewed? Or one
first
of them?
First movie I reviewed?
Yeah.
Got paid to review? Got paid to review.
And not just annoyed your family about.
Right.
But actually got paid.
Not your opinion, but yeah.
I don't, because I didn't set out to be a critic. I mean, my first love was movie history and remains my first love. And so that's what I was doing as a kid, as an adolescent, was writing articles about Buster Keaton and Douglas Fairbanks and Charlie Chaplin and such. And I don't think I wrote a review until I got into college. I went to New York University and we had a daily newspaper there. And I started writing actual reviews for our paper. And it was rough. Well, actually, it was exactly the same time that I got the job to devise or compile the first edition of that movie guide.
Oh, really? Oh.
I was 17 years old.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. That's a collector's item.
I was 17 years old when a teacher in my high school, an English teacher, who I didn't even have classes with, but she knew this fanzine that I was publishing.
Mm-hmm.
Fanzine, old-fashioned term for amateur magazine.
Yeah.
And she said, I have a friend who's an editor at Signet Books in New York. This was in the suburbs in New Jersey. I have a friend who's an editor at Signet Books in New York. You should call him up after school one day, go to see him. I think the two of you would hit it off. And I've told this story so many times. But
not here.
So I went to see him, made an appointment, took the bus over the George Washington Bridge, the subway downtown, went to see him, and I brought some copies of the magazine to give him. And it turned out he already knew the magazine and didn't associate me with it, and I didn't associate his name with anybody who had subscribed to it. I don't know why we're all in the dark that way. But he said, do you know this book, Movies on TV? and there was such a book.
Yeah.
And I said, yeah, I use it every day. He said, what do you think of it? I said, well, it's okay as far as it goes. He said, what would you do differently? And I knew this book inside and out. I said, well, I'd put more cast names. He only has like two cast names for a movie. Mm-hmm. I'd list the director and I'd tell you the running time so you know if the local TV station is cutting it down to or cutting it to shreds.
Yeah.
And I said, and I'd say if it's in color or black and white, which in those days mattered more relevant than it is today, and et cetera. And I said all this stuff. And he said, well, how'd you like to do it? I said, what do you mean? He said, how would you like, I'm trying to do a rival book. How would you like to do it? I said, well, I guess so. And essentially he hired me on the spot.
Wow.
And,
the rest is history.
The rest is the rest of my life.
Yeah.
That was a 45-year run.
Wow. That's amazing.
45 years.
What did your family say when you went home and told them that?
They were as dumbfounded as I.
They thought it was real?
And what,
they thought you were never going to amount to anything.
And then the editor, who became a lifelong friend and had a good long life, just passed away a few years ago. And out here. So my wife and I got to see him in his later years. He said to me, so what are you going to do now? I said, what do you mean? He said, well, I've just given you a job. What are you going to do now? I said, well, I'm about to graduate from high school and I've been accepted at NYU. I'm going to go to college. He said, why? I said, I just hired you to write a book. I said, well, I know, but I was such a square. I said, but I'm supposed to go to college.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad I did. Not so much for the, well, I was a journalism major and that was worthwhile.
Yeah.
It was, all the courses were taught by working journalists and that really was valuable. And, got to cherry pick some film classes. That was fun. And then I got to work on the paper, which was really the best part of being there. And I made great friendships there and it was a good experience.
Mm-hmm. Mm. I'm curious, actually. I have your book, just, you know, it was such a huge part of our lives, this book, because you never don't reference it, especially when you're watching TV back when mm-hmm. you didn't know when something was going to show up. Mm-hmm.
And there was mm-hmm. no internet.
And is there a movie or one movie out there that has got like the worst bum rap ever that you think is a great movie and everybody just...
Oh, gee. Like, well, I just, you know, as we're speaking, I just, with my family, put on a film festival this past weekend.
Just going to ask you about
called Malton Fest at the Egyptian Theater here in Hollywood. And the whole point of the festival was showing movies that were underrated.
Yeah.
And films that we thought deserved a bigger audience than they got.
How many of my films were in the festival?
Brain candy.
That's a recurring theme in my work. I wrote a book called 151 Best Movies You've Never Seen.
Never seen. I know it. Yep.
So, you know, there are too many to network. But the poster child for this festival and for all this was our opening night movie. We had a late afternoon movie, which was Please Give by Nicole Holof Center. Great, great film.
Mm-hmm.
And then we showed Sing City. Sing Street, my brain.
Oh, Sing Street.
Sing Street.
Sing
John Carney's film.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know it.
You got to see it, Dave.
A couple years ago, right?
It was awesome. It was an awesome movie.
Oh, yeah.
It's a great movie. And I had the thrill of sitting there watching it again on the giant screen at the Egyptian and watching the whole audience fall in love with this movie. And almost none of them had seen it before. And they embraced this movie. And at the end, no one got up during the credits because they reprised all the songs on the track.
Oh, that's so cool.
And they wanted to hear them again, and they clapped along with one of them. And then when it was over, everyone went outside to the lobby and the courtyard outside, and we were serving Maltinis at the bar.
Nice.
And
can I get one of those now?
and everybody stayed and talked to each other.
Oh, how nice.
And which is what my daughter, who really put this whole festival idea together, she said that's what she wanted, was a sense of community. There's nothing wrong with watching films at home. It's fine. Yeah. It's a convenience.
It's more fun.
We all do it, but it's more fun if you're watching it with the right audience, not just an audience, but a like-minded audience. Yes. And that's what we had. We had just a great, great time.
Wow. I mean, rep theaters were the thing.
Yeah, back in high school.
You know, I mean, we had the Bloor Theater in Toronto, which
Cinema
was
5 in Montreal.
Because you couldn't see those movies otherwise. Mm-hmm. They didn't show up on TV. There were a bunch of Hitchcocks, I remember, that never showed up on TV.
Well, I remember seeing
Rear Window
Samurai
and
there.
And,
and you could go see a movie for a dollar.
That's how I ended up loving movies, was because of that theater. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I remember seeing a really weird Art Garfunkel movie.
Oh, Bad Timing.
Bad Timing. Obsession.
Nick Rogue. Yeah.
That was a strange movie.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah.
But where else would I have seen that?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But amazing.
Before home video.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. And I think a movie Kevin MacDonald and I was talking about a movie that got really maligned that is actually really good. It was Ishtar.
Well, there's a whole range of opinions about Ishtar, but Jesse and I, who do our podcast called Malton on Movies, we got to interview Paul Williams last year. We had a great time with him. And I asked him the question that many people have been asking for decades. When are we going to get a cast album, original soundtrack album from that film with those hilariously funny, ingenious songs.
Brilliant.
Yeah. The lyrics were amazing.
He and his partner wrote. And that's my favorite aspect of the film.
Yeah. Well, but it's like it's a great Elaine May script and
directed.
And, you know, but I remember at the time it got reviews for its budget.
Yes. Unfortunately, it did. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was kind of a big
$40 million.
Big sitting duck at the time.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. And there was a lot of what would you call it? A lot of gossip.
About the making of it for about a year.
Exactly.
Yes. But it was all that Hollywood's become bloated beyond its endurance. Mm-hmm. How can you spend $40 million making a movie, which now is laughable?
Yeah.
Right.
No.
Right.
Yeah.
They used to do that a lot back then, where you'd hear about a movie for about a year before it came out. If it was a big deal like Apocalypse Now, I remember reading about it constantly. Yeah.
And they started making it before the Vietnam War.
That's right. And you know what? They were just lucky.
Yeah. Because it would have made no sense at all.
Yeah. We're like,
anyway, we're still waiting for those songs from Ishtar.
Yeah, that would be great. Yeah.
In fact, I'm not sure. I hope there's an album from Sing Street. I'm not sure if there is, but they're great songs.
That was a great movie.
Who was in Sing Street?
That's it. Nobody. The leading lady, Lucy Boynton, is now making a name for herself. She was in Bohemian Rhapsody.
Oh, yes.
A beautiful young woman. And my daughter knows what the young leading man is doing now. He's on a show. He's on a series. But there, you know, so it was tough to promote, I'm sure. When you don't have stars, it's always tough to sell a film.
Yeah.
But this one is such a charmer.
I have to see that.
Do you have some favorite directors
right now? Yeah, she would.
Like newer people?
Jeff Nichols.
I don't know Jeff Nichols.
Who's Jeff Nichols?
He made my favorite film of 2013, Mud.
Mud.
Wonderful movie. And it came out in the spring of that year. And when I would try to tout it to people, they'd say, well, who's in it? I say, well, Matthew McConaughey. And they go, oh. And then that fall came the McConaissance.
Yes.
Right. Well, he turned up in Wolf of Wall Street and then Dallas Buyers Club, which obviously.
Yeah.
The McConaissance.
And so the timing was just off.
Yeah.
There's a lot of other good people in it, too. Reese Witherspoon has a smallish but important role. Sam Shepard is in it.
Yeah.
Jeff Nichols is a very talented writer, director. Mud is a great, great movie. He did the interracial couple.
Loving.
Loving, exactly.
Oh, that was a great
movie. And also Midnight Special.
Oh, really?
The new one called Midnight.
Well, the new one. I don't know that one.
Paul got really excited there for a second.
I thought it was the old
Midnight Special. Yeah,
no.
It's the story of Gary Mjeldier's rise to fame.
He's a very talented guy, and he's on my radar big time for see what he has next up his sleeve. And he works Michael Shannon is kind of his good luck charm,
right?
And is in all of his movies, including the one that I can't remember the name of that came before Mud. I'm having a brain blip tonight as I'm sitting here with you.
I want to be someone's good luck charm.
I'd like that, John Ratzenberger for Pixar.
I'm tired of being everybody's bad luck charm.
Yeah. I'm Pixar's shameful secret.
That's true. You are.
Now I worked with a man who's been acclaimed as the worst director of all time, Uwe Boll. Have you seen any of his movies?
I have not.
Then you keep your soul clean.
Okay.
I remember I was in a movie years ago that was directed by a guy whose father paid for the movie.
I've done one
lucky
of those.
Guy.
I did one of those.
Yeah, lucky guy. I think his father was a businessman.
That movie was epic.
He put the movie together, and we always wondered, how did this guy get to direct this movie? And then we finally found out his dad's paying for it.
But everybody was in it.
Everybody. It had Kevin. I was in it with Kevin. It was
Dom DeLuise.
He hired all these old comedians.
Rodney Dangerfield.
Dom DeLuise asked Rodney you to Dangerfield. Sit on his lap.
Yeah, it was a Godfather parody, but it was classically, amazingly horrible.
Well, people talk about Michael Bay sometimes.
Yes.
Or our son.
But he has a distinction. He's the only director, good or bad, in history who has had a song sung about him in a major motion picture.
What do you mean?
Which one?
Think about it.
A song about Michael Bay.
Mm-hmm.
Standing on the dock of the bay?
No. Not a pun.
Okay.
An actual song about Michael Bay.
About Michael Bay.
Is it an animated movie?
Yes.
Okay. Oh, is it the Lego movie?
No.
South Park?
It's the
South Park.
The
guy.
It's their second film.
Team America.
Team America.
That's right.
Team America.
Which is a great movie.
I was cheating and looking it up.
That's good. Yeah.
Very funny movie with a very outrageously funny song about Michael Bay.
Yes, I remember that.
Who does that?
Yeah.
Matt and Trey.
That's right.
Very clever. Brilliant. And on that note, let's take a little pause here.
Okay.
Leonard, would you like to take a bet on or, you know, make a guess as to what our ad might be? We don't know what they are. So
we'd like
to guess.
I don't know. Could it be Castro Convertibles?
Well, let's find out.
Oh, right. Good guess.
Well, that turned out to be a pretty lousy guess.
Yeah. That was completely off. Go, that was like not even close.
And you hold yourself out as an expert. I forget what, you know, maybe not in that subject.
Not in all areas.
2013, they're going to burn that tonight.
Yeah. I have a question.
Oh, Paul
you do?
Question.
Yes.
Pause the question, everyone.
The thing that's around now that wasn't around, you know, in the 80s and the 90s is the
My career.
And it's still not around. Yeah. Is the rating system of this percentage thing that the Rotten Tomatoes thing, basically.
Oh, Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh, yeah. Is you get a number on a movie.
Yeah.
And do you think that
and
works?
And films rise or fall based on their Rotten Tomato score now.
Well, I'm a tomato.
You're a top critic.
That's right. But I don't review that many movies lately. I've gotten choosier and I don't have a gig. Mm-hmm. I don't have a regular slot on a publication or on a TV show. I write for my website. Mm-hmm. And since I'm my own boss, I don't have to go see a lot of junk that comes along. So I'm very choosy.
That's called making it.
Yeah. So, I'm not in the average or the aggregate of a lot of different films, but on the ones I review, I am there. So I remind people that we think that film critics are obsolete or irrelevant, and a lot of people do feel that in the social media age, that if there are no critics, there'll be no Rotten Tomatoes anymore.
Yeah,
right.
Mm-hmm. And if they count on Rotten Tomatoes as a guide of some sort, I don't think it's a bad thing, and I don't think it's inaccurate either. Or irrelevant because if something gets, Sing Street has a 95.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
which is tomatoes. That says there's a pretty large consensus of people who think this is an exceptional film.
It also says there's five people out there who are insane for not liking it.
Because when I'm looking for movies on iTunes, I will look at the Rotten Tomato scores for movies that I haven't heard of. And usually if it's
11,
a really low score.
If it's extremely high or extremely low, I think that does send a message.
Yes.
Right.
Just as Gene Siskel and Roger Ebert had their thumbs up, thumbs down.
Yeah. Right.
And they took a lot of heat for that. How can you... summarize all the nuances of a film in a thumb up or thumb down. Well, it was shorthand, just like the ratings in my movie guide were shorthand. If you're not reading further, if you're not exploring more in more depth what the critics had to say about it, then you're just left with the shorthand.
Yeah.
And
Rotten Tomatoes, I'll always dig into the actual reviews.
Yeah.
Like go through and find the critics whose reviews I like.
I probably would never have seen Tucker and Dale versus Evil if it weren't for the Rotten Tomatoes reviews.
I mentioned that film the other day.
Yeah. I love that film.
And then you certainly wouldn't have seen it five times.
Well, true. Yeah. It's true. Yeah. And
it's a terrific movie.
It's a great movie.
Yeah. I remember that it was the TV guide, you'd get like three stars. Know, this is worth watching.
Oh, yeah, three. That's a lot.
Yeah.
I think, back to your book, I remember seeing certain movies that I'd never heard of, circling them because you had given them such high ratings. Mm. Remember one, is Gun Crazy?
Oh, yeah.
I remember seeing Gun Crazy.
Hell of a movie.
That was insanely good.
Yes.
But, it's a good system that,
I didn't want to do it. My editor said, no, you've got to. I said, why? I don't want to have to arbitrarily come up with ratings. He said, people love it. It's shorthand and people love it. He was right.
Yeah.
And I know from the reaction I got over the years, especially in the early years, in 1 week's time, I had two different people stop me in the streets of New York. One said, you know what I do with your book? I said, what? He said, I take your review and I double the rating, and then I know if I'm going to like it or not. I said, well, whatever works, fine.
Wow.
And I swear, days later, somebody said, you know what I do? I said, what? He said, I cut your rating in half, and then I'll know if I'm going to like the movie or not. That's absolutely true. So, it's just an opinion. That's all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But a qualified opinion.
An opinion from someone who knows
that's
what they're talking
about. Because you talk about Rotten Tomatoes news and rating, and that everybody's a critic now. Our son, who's a big movie fan and very much obsessed with ratings, he qualifies by who's giving the rating. So he...
Metacritic.
You raised him right.
He gives, he'll give status to people who are...
He also looks at the audience score and the Metacritic score.
Yeah,
and
he balances, does the math, weighs it. Well, I don't think I'm going to see that. And I go, well, fuck you.
Yeah.
Because we're going to John Wick. You don't have to come.
That's right. It's got 98%.
Yeah. We don't care because it's Keanu shooting a lot of people.
And our daughter just picks movies by whether they're 80s teen movies.
Oh.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. She's going to run out.
It's amazing the endurance those films have had.
It's true.
Yeah. It surprises mm-hmm. me.
A resurgence.
Yeah. Well, no, they've never gone away.
Oh, I know. True.
They've
that's
really true. Never gone away, those John Hughes movies mm-hmm. in particular.
Yeah. I remember not liking them in the 80s.
Oh, well, I loved them.
I had some
Ferris Bueller was one of the best movies ever when I saw it. I just loved it so much.
I'm a little older than you, and
hated it.
Here we go. I remember having misgivings about some of those films. Mm-hmm. They all had their strengths, but I felt that they were uneven. I guess that's the best word to describe.
Yeah, sure.
But they have been embraced.
Yeah,
definitely.
Fully embraced.
They really tapped into the teens of the time.
Well, the Breakfast Club, I thought, was right on the money.
The best of the genre.
Yeah,
yeah, mm-hmm. for sure.
But like the parade scene in Ferris Bueller is just
awful.
That's
a great scene.
Oh, I was thinking it's awful.
Really? Oh, yeah. I love it.
Yeah.
But it's a fantasy.
It's fun. Yeah. It's a fantasy.
Right. Yeah.
But it's also, Ferris himself is, fantasy teenager,
the
kid that gets away with everything.
And of course, I'd already seen Alfie, so.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
And I thought the part where...
Mature Fury.
Yeah.
The part where Ferris Bueller drops the crystal thing and says Rosebud, I thought that was stupid.
Wow. Yeah. You must have been tired that day.
Yeah, I think so. See, that depends on your review, right? Depending on your mood, I would think.
Well, it's true. That's the tough part is powering through that.
Right.
You know, and...
Just because you haven't eaten doesn't mean it's a bad movie.
It's true.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to remember something. If I think you were interviewed by this guy from Canada at some point, Elwi Yost.
Oh, yes.
Do you remember Elwi?
Oh, I was on a show more than once.
Yes, I remember to see you on, because you used Saturday night at the movies.
He's a Canadian treasure.
Best. Yeah.
Best. He came here and
he would bank
a whole bunch of interviews for a season.
Yes.
And he would ask me about a number of different films so that he could use them.
But he would have like you on and then Jimmy Stewart, he'd have Henry Fonda discussing, how the West was, not mm-hmm. how the West was, Once Upon a Time in the West.
Mm-hmm.
He had a show where he'd show one fifth of a movie every night.
Yeah, he had
it was called Magic Shadows. So you'd see one fifth of a movie, and by Friday you'd seen the whole movie. And I saw Kind Hearts and Coronets that way, I remember. And it was like...
One Kind Heart at a Time?
Yeah.
It was
like, but you
your brain
miss
somehow
it.
Put it together. But it was pretty confusing.
And Saturday night, he'd have two movies that had be on a theme. Mm-hmm. And then he would have the interviews in between the movies. Mm-hmm. And it was like, and in those days, nobody was doing this. There was like there was nowhere to see. Like, nowhere you would see John Ford being interviewed.
Right.
His son, Graham Yost, became a
very
powerhouse.
Successful screenwriter, producer.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Amazing.
Yeah, but it's I was wondering if you knew.
Elwi was a lovely guy.
He was a beautiful man. Yeah, he used to come and give lectures at my high school.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember winning a prize because I was the only one in the class who could remember the last line from King Kong,
which is
it wasn't beauty. It wasn't the planes killed the beast. It was beauty killed the beast. It wasn't the planes. Twas beauty killed the beast.
Twas beauty killed the beast.
Yeah.
Robert Armstrong.
That's nice. It's a nice memory. Getting that award.
Yeah.
Is that like your only good memory?
That's it from childhood.
That's pretty it, right?
That's nice.
Yeah. Well, that's nice. You have one. That's good.
Yeah. Oh, sweet boy. Oh, sweet Canadian boy.
And then what happened when you brought the award home to your parents?
You know what? Stop it, Paul. Yeah. Stop it.
What'd your dad say?
Stop it.
He beat me around the head with it.
Oh, Jesus. There we go.
Yeah.
Who was this?
There's that other good memory that time my dad mistimed his punch.
That was a good one. Yeah. He got his own knuckles bruised that day, I'll tell you.
And did your mom say, don't make a fuss?
Don't fuss.
Don't make a fuss, Dave.
Let it be, Dave.
Don't make a fuss.
My mom was English.
Mm-hmm.
Don't make a fuss, Dave. Your teeth will grow back.
That was the closest thing she had to a philosophy. Was, oh, don't fuss.
Dave and I on our shared childhood memories. Best not say anything. Oh, Daddy's not home. Off you go then.
Yeah.
Why? What's it? Where's Daddy? Oh, best not make a fuss.
Oh, when I was a kid,
you guys had
to borrow records from my local public library. This is a complete tangent now.
Yep. All right.
I like it.
And I brought home the original cast album of Beyond the Fringe.
Oh,
God. Yeah.
And committed it to memory. I played it many times. But that's what you just reminded me of. But I'll put on a kettle, have a nice cup of tea. And was the answer to almost any...
any problem.
Any problem, yeah.
That's how they defeated Hitler.
It's true. A nice cup of tea always makes everything
cuppa.
All right.
Right.
Cuppa
have a cup.
Keep calm and carry on. There you are.
That's right.
Oh, the British are stupid.
Wow.
He's just kidding, British
fans. You know what's
both
nice,
British
though?
Fans just stop listening.
When we have surprise, usually it's always a surprise guest, which is fun because the boys don't have to do homework and prepare. Yeah. Because they're very lazy.
It's pretty really great.
It was really amazing seeing them light up when you walked in. That was pretty
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, it's very flattering.
I was hoping Jessie be here because I want to see her hair in person.
Yes, you do.
I'm always that girl. I'm starting to bother her. I think I'm always like, how'd you do that? Hit like.
She has rainbow hair.
She is amazing.
Oh, yeah.
And it is not effort-free.
No.
Takes some doing.
And, she's, and even if you go deeper than the hair, she's quite delightful.
She's very delightful.
Well, delightful woman.
I'm parked in
the Jessie
hair.
I'm a Jessie fan.
Nice young woman under that head of hair.
Yes. Yes. Great that you get to work together.
What you see with me is nothing but effort.
Yeah.
And hair.
And this is what we got.
And hair. Nothing but effort and hair.
5:30 in the morning, Paul's in the makeup truck.
That's right.
He has a makeup truck at
I'll
home.
I'll be out in a minute.
I'm doing my hairs.
But I'm I wish that wasn't untrue.
I'm just brushing my back.
Well, I hear Eben
very the ivories.
Just sort of trying to lead us to the conclusion of this show. And we want to thank you so much for being here, Leonard.
This is a
complete thrill.
Absolute delight. We want to thank folks who helped put the show together today, Dustin Knaus, Kaylin Rushing, and Lauren Afnir. And of course, everyone here, but you've already heard their names, so screw them. So until the next time.